straight to it. And now it gives me a great pleasure to introduce our speaker for this evening, Angela P. from Santa Barbara.
Oh, hi, Angela Alcoholic.
Angela.
Thanks, Kevin, for asking me to come up and speak. Thanks, Darren, for passengering me, letting me drive you up here. I learned early on in Alcoholics Anonymous that you never say no to when someone asks you to do something in Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's like goes against every fiber of my being. So I reluctantly always say yes, and so I'm here. And I will just get right into it. I started drinking when I was about 13. My biological father is an alcoholic. His parents were both alcoholics. Both of my grandparents died from this disease. And there was no reason. I never felt different than anyone else when I was growing up. I just felt like I was born into the wrong house. So it had nothing to do with the people around me, just my family members. I always thought that I was, I thought that I was destined for bigger things, and wasn't quite sure why I was ended up in the family that I did. So my first drink was, I made strawberry daiquiris out of gin, because clearly I thought I was sophisticated, and that's what sophisticated folks drink is strawberry daiquiris, and you don't make daiquiris with gin, and you get sick, and if you drank as much as I did, I got sick, and that didn't put me off at all. I was sold on the idea. I drank throughout pretty much the rest of my life. There was times when I was willingly sober without going to Alcoholics Anonymous or doing anything in this program. Because I have really strong willpower, I was just able to just stop drinking because I didn't feel like doing it anymore. But that didn't mean that the biggest thing that I suffer from ever went away, which is a spiritual malady. I don't have a story of waking up in the morning and drinking, even at the end of my drinking. I wasn't an everyday drinker, but I did things from a very early age that I don't think most normal people do. And when I was about 7 years old, my sister and I would walk to school or ride our bikes to school, and we would go to the Alpha Beta, which was a grocery store, and I would steal candy, and then I would sell it on the schoolyard. And I didn't think that that was absurd or weird. I thought that that was pretty normal, and it was awesome because I had something that you didn't have, and so you needed me, and you wanted to be my friend, and I made a little extra cash on the side. So it worked out for me. I got caught, I think, when I was maybe 6 months into it, and I was embarrassed and had to take it back to the store, and then just went to a different store and stole from a liquor store after that. And, you know, those are the things that I did. I lied frequently. I was just an asshole. I was an asshole from a very young age. And I didn't, you know, I look back at that now and I don't think that that was normal. I don't know that all children are like that. I don't have kids, so I don't really know what to compare it to, but I just don't think that that's normal behavior for a child. And I don't know what was wrong with me. I could never, you know, it wasn't something my mom or my dad did or anything like that. It was just something that I was born with. And, you know, I struggled with things throughout my entire life with now what I know was a spiritual malady, just being disconnected from something, just living off of my own self-will. And Angela was always right. Angela is and was the ultimate authority on what everything should be and how it should be done. And it didn't matter if it got me into trouble or if good things came of it for me. It didn't matter because I was always going to be right, and I was always going to go off of what I thought was the best for me. And, you know, I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous that that's not the best way to think, and it's not the best way for me to think. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous in September of 2010, and I came in, I didn't come into these rooms. My last day of drinking was 2 days before I was taken in for a 6-year prison sentence. So I actually got sober in prison. My first 2 years of sobriety were spent in prison. But Alcoholics Anonymous was in my life before that. When I met Darren, he was sober, and we got married, and you guys were around all the time. You were so nice and kind to me, and I hated all of you. I didn't know what was so funny and so why you were so happy, and why you always called me to go do things. I had real resentments towards Alcoholics Anonymous. Darren's super active in this program and in Santa Barbara, and we were newly married, and he was always at a meeting, always working with his guys, and I didn't understand it, and I had a real, real resentment towards Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't understand that. And nobody ever said, none of our friends that were in this program ever said to me throughout those years that after we were married and I was drinking before I went away, no one ever said, maybe you're an alcoholic, maybe you should come. I used to go to meetings, open speaker meetings that I could sit through, and they were awesome, they were funny, and that was it. I'm out of here, I'm not coming back. But no one ever said, do the checklist, the little pamphlet with the things. No one ever, no one ever pushed it on me, and that was awesome, because I look back now and I think, there's no way I would have done this if someone had pushed it on me, or if someone had said, you're an alcoholic. It literally took going to prison. I read this when I first came in, and I was like, oh, that's funny. That's totally me. And I didn't think I had a bottom. I didn't think I had a really low bottom. Darren always reminds me that going to prison isn't a very high bottom. I came in, early on, I heard the message. I heard it for, 6 years before I came in these rooms. I went to prison. I was arrested in 2009 sometime, and I battled a year and a half court case every month. Anyone that's been in the legal system will know, you go to court every 30 days, and they say, oh, we're going to postpone it another 30 days. And I lived my life 30 day to 30 day, and I couldn't get a job. I couldn't start anything because I didn't know what was going to happen. And all I knew was, I'm coming back in 30 days. What a nightmare. And instead of, really looking at my life at that time and spending time with my family and thinking about the things that I had done, I wasted a lot of that time on going out and drinking and trying to, because I'm going away to prison for 6 years or however long it may be, so I am going to live up life before I go away. And to the expense of my family and their feelings and everything else. And I went in, my last night of drinking was because I dragged my sister and Darren to a UB40 concert on the beach in Santa Barbara. And, that was the last night that I drank. And it wasn't because I wanted to stop drinking that night. It was just that I chose to spend the next 2 days with my family before I went in. And I had a year and a half to do that, and I chose just those last 2 days. And even then, I had to have some of my friends around. And that's for now, when I look back at that, it's heartbreaking to me that that's how I acted. But that is how Angela acts. She does what she wants, and it doesn't matter if it hurts your feelings or not. Because that's kind of how I've always been. And I didn't think about you or you. I thought about me only and how it was going to affect me. So I was finally sentenced to 6 years in prison, knowing that I'd get three automatically. And we went in on a Tuesday, and I spent 2 weeks in the county jail. And they transport you in the middle of the night to the big house. They don't tell you when you're going or anything like that. And two women that were very friendly to me all the time brought an H&I meeting into the county jail on a Sunday night. And I was transported Monday morning at around 4 a.m. And I was the only one that attended that meeting because they were friendly, familiar faces. And we didn't talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. They didn't talk about the book. They never said, listen, you're here. Maybe you should look at this. Maybe you should think about this. They didn't say anything like that to me. They just gave me some hope and, love and kindness, which was really awesome. And because prison's not a very happy place. And they left. And, I look back at that now and I think it was some kind of God shot that they came in that night because, 4 hours later I was transported out of there. And I landed on the receiving yard at Chowchilla Prison, which is a level 4 prison. And nothing prepares you for that, especially when you're an asshole. You learn really fast that you don't be an asshole in prison. You put your head down and you keep your mouth shut and you get on with your business. And if you're a white collar criminal, they figure you out pretty quickly and they ask you where the money is. And that was my experience. And some of my past behavior lying helped me with that because I was able to lie my way out of that one. You're in a receiving yard for a couple months and you don't get mail, you don't get phone calls, you don't get visitors. And I had two books to choose from. One was the Bible and one was the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I chose to take the big book and I started reading through it and I started relating to a lot of what I read. And I started to understand that it wasn't about me picking up a drink every day, every morning. It was about the spiritual malady and how my thinking was different than everyone else's. And how that's not normal. Because I had just come to believe that it was really normal for me to act like that. And that's I thought, how everyone acted. I have friends now that are not in the deal that I work with. And I say things like, is this sound normal to you? And they're like, oh my God, no. And I'm like, me neither. Totally not normal to me either. And I'm like, oh Jesus. Like when you say it and someone reacts like that, you really realize that you've got a pretty fucked up way of thinking. I was able to relate with some of the things in the big book. And I didn't think that was ever going to happen. I didn't think that I was an alcoholic, even though when I drink, I can't control my drinking. I overshoot the mark every time. I have that need to go out and get more and do more when I do. And, given the opportunity, I'm sure that I could have gone down a much, quicker, rapid slope down a hill if I had carried on drinking like that, the way that I could drink. I tried to, whenever I did drink, I would ingest as much as I possibly could quickly. I'd get sick, and then Darren would always say, I thought you only had 3 beers, and I'd say, I must have taken some Advil or something with them, and I got sick. I don't know. And meanwhile, it's just like tons of vodka drinks down before I have to go home. So I understood the drinking part of it in the book because it was very clear to me, and I understood the spiritual malady. I understood this weird thinking that was going on, this very alarming kind of way of living. And I realized that was me as well. And I reached out to one of these women that had come into the jail, and I reached out to her through the mail, and I asked her if she would sponsor me. And that was a pretty bold step for me because I didn't really know what that meant. Anybody that's been to county jail or prison, even briefly, kind of knows that everything is completely exaggerated in there. Like, your world becomes so small that it's so drama-filled, and, like, the smallest thing. I tried to explain this to someone, but if you steal someone's shower shoes, like, you could get killed for that. And, like, that's how serious it is. It's just, like, you know, everything becomes so, you know, just ridiculously dramatized. And I thought maybe I'm just really focusing on this because I'm here and I really have nothing else to do. But I gave it a shot, and I asked this woman to sponsor me, and she did. And she started corresponding to through mail with me and walked me through the steps. And I read, you know, I went through the steps pretty quickly. I didn't have anything else going on, so I did what I was asked per the mail, how fast the mail was. I was asking for pamphlets to be sent in to me, literature, anything that I could get my hands on to read, I did. And, you know, I went through the steps in prison. I didn't have someone there face-to-face with me working on this stuff. I didn't have meetings to go to at that time when I was on A yard. So as much as I was sober and going through the steps, I really wasn't very spiritual. And some things about what I had done, my crime, had been, Darren had kind of uncovered over those 3 months that I was there. And he came up to visit, and this place is 5-hour drive. He came up to visit. I have 1-hour visit behind glass. I'm in a lovely orange jumpsuit. And Darren said, I want a divorce. I found all this stuff out. I want a divorce. And I said, right, what about my car and my clothes? And that's the way I thought still. And, you know, again, I was sober. I was working these steps, but I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't have someone. I didn't have this interaction. I didn't have meetings to attend. And I had the nerve to say that to him through glass. And that's horrible. You know, that was just my behavior. I had no way to repair my behavior because I didn't know how to repair it at that time. I didn't know it was wrong. I thought that that was normal. I thought that that was okay. And, you know, after that, we spoke a few times. Obviously, we didn't divorce, but another long road that I had to go through to win that trust back. And I, after that, I got moved to a different facility on the receiving yard, and I got to have phone calls. And I wish I could tell you that my behavior improved, but it didn't. I was able to use the phone, and then I was able to hang up on him whenever I would get upset. And you can't call back, he can't call me back, and that's that. And, you know, this is, you know, it just got worse and worse as I went away. I'm in prison. I have no right to act like this. Like, I have just no right to be like this to people, to anybody. And I was doing it to everybody that I came in contact with. And I still felt like I don't know what's wrong with me. Obviously, Alcoholics Anonymous is not working. Obviously, what I did didn't affect me well enough for me to change who I am and my behavior. It didn't. Because I'm in prison, and I'm worse than I was out there. And I finally got moved to a different yard, which was the roughest yard you can be on in this prison. They have, like, different levels, and they put me on the worst one. And I feel like, looking back now, every bit of experience that I had with being in that facility was to just show me another lesson about myself. And to show me that you can't act like this, you can't be this way. And, you know, I don't think about picking up a drink today because I think, oh, I don't want to go back to prison. I don't care. I could go back to prison. It wouldn't, like, I can do it. I've done it. It's okay. It's not what keeps me from picking up a drink or you know, stop going to meetings or stop having this spiritual connection. It's because I don't want to be an asshole anymore. I don't want people to look at me and wonder what's wrong with her, because that's how people were looking at me. And when I got moved, I was able to go to meetings on this new yard, and I was able to really work these steps again. I got moved to another facility. Not long after that, I started going through training to be a wildland firefighter. And I was able to go to a couple meetings a week. One was Alcoholics Anonymous, one was Al-Anon, one was NA. And I would go to all of these meetings. I just wouldn't identify and I wouldn't share in Narcotics Anonymous or Al-Anon. But I got the message. I went to hear the message. And I went to be with you people because up until that point, which was about 6 months into my sentence, I hadn't been around you guys. And if I had been around you guys on the yard, I didn't know it. And that's really when I started working the steps again. I got two phone calls a week. I called Darren 1 week and my sponsor. The next week, I called my sponsor and my mom. So I took one of those phone calls every week and I called my sponsor and I stayed connected with her. And I went to these meetings and I read my fourth step. I did my fifth step on the yard with some stranger and I got nothing out of it. I got no relief from it. I thought it was weird. I'm sure she thought it was weird. I don't even think she was in Alcoholics Anonymous. I just started feeling more at ease and peace. And I got moved to a camp. I really fought to like be at the closest camp to home and in Malibu. And then they sent me to the furthest one away in San Diego. Just another lesson for Angela. I just don't get what I want. And that's where I met a woman that was really active in Alcoholics Anonymous. She had been in prison for about 8 years, sober the entire time. And I asked her to sponsor me. I still kept the sponsor on the streets. And I started sponsoring women in prison. And some of those women are out. And I'm in touch with them still to this day. They're not all sober. But, you know, I'm still very close with them. And again, I would go to two meetings a week. And anyone that, you know, does H&I, I just thank you for that. Because the people that brought meetings into the facilities that I were in saved my life. I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I would have gotten out of prison and I just would have carried on with my life if it wasn't for the people that brought panels in. And, you know, they came in during on holidays, they came in any time, they were there. They never missed a meeting. And that's just amazing. I remember sitting in a meeting, it was a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and I saw this girl was sitting there, and she had super cute boots on and jeans and like a blazer, and I was like, wow, like I'm never going to be like that again. I'm just not. And she started, that was at the beginning of the meeting, she started sharing, and she had been in that camp 10 years prior, and I thought, there may be a little hope for me. Maybe. Let's see how it goes. And, you know, I did a lot of amends while I was in that camp. I was there for a year. And not once when I ever did an amends, whether it was in a letter or over the phone, did I say, I'm sorry. Because all of my sorries in the past didn't mean anything. That just meant, I'm sorry, just forget about it because I'm going to do it again in about a week. And that's all it meant. And people figured that out. And I just never said that. I just continued to act correctly, the way that I had learned to act in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have some slip-ups here and there, but I just continued to do the next right thing. And for a little over a year that I was there, I was at complete peace with myself. I was free. I was in prison, but I was absolutely free. And I actually had a little bit of hope for the future, and I knew it was going to be a rough road, and I knew not everything was going to work out. I didn't know if I was going to be able to go home. Not everything was repaired with Darren and I didn't know if that was going to ever be repaired. And I was released in May of 2012, and I think I got out on like a Wednesday, and I thought, when I got home, I thought, I think maybe I was just an alcoholic in prison. I think, like I said in the beginning, everything is exaggerated. And I thought, I don't think that I'm really an alcoholic. I think that was all just a bit of a weird thing I went through. And so that carried on for a few days. I didn't go to meetings. I didn't reach out to any of the women in the program. And finally, on that Sunday, my mom came up, and I had gained a little bit of weight in prison. They don't have the healthiest food there, and none of my clothes fit. I was miserable. I was pale. I was not happy. She took us to Costco, and she kept saying, oh, you got to try this bread, or you've got to try this. And she just kept saying, and I said, I can't eat that. I can't eat that. I can't eat that. And finally, I just lost it. And I had an absolute meltdown in Costco. And I was screaming and yelling, and I was pounding my fists on my legs. And my mom was just like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know what to do for you. And, you know, when I came out, it was just tears all the time. Everybody crying all the fucking time. And, you know, happy for me to be home, but didn't understand. And I was crying because I didn't understand. It's not easy to be gone for 2 years. Try going into Starbucks and ordering a coffee and not breaking down into tears. And, you know, Darren didn't say anything, but maybe you should go to a meeting tomorrow. And I went to a meeting at the Harbor at 6:45 in the morning, and I cried through that entire meeting. And that was the first meeting that I had ever been to when I, as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, outside of prison. And I cried through the whole thing. And that became my home group for about a year and a half. And the only person in that entire room that I identified with was this guy called Doug, who was just paroled from prison. And I thought, oh my God, are you serious? This is it. Me and Doug are the only two that are going to be, you know, sticking together in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not, I don't identify with her. I don't identify with her. And that's it. I identify with this man that was spent 30-something years in prison. And that was it. And that was even worse. Like, it was just compounding. And at that moment, I knew that this is where I was belonged. And I knew that it wasn't just a prison thing. And I knew that I definitely belonged in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I got really busy. And I kept that sponsor that it took me through the steps while I was away. We worked the steps again. I got active. I sponsored women. I went to several meetings a week. I met with my sponsor whenever I possibly could. And I have 6 years sobriety, and I have a different sponsor now, but I call her every single day. And I do that because if I don't stay connected to one thing, then I'm going to feel like something's off. And I don't like to feel like something's off. It's not good for me. Because if something's off there, it's super easy for me to just go, I don't need those meetings either. And I definitely don't need to pray or meditate. I definitely don't need to have a spiritual connection with something other than myself. And that's just where I go very quickly. So I stay super connected. And it was time for me to look for a job. And I had been out of prison for about 6 months, maybe a little bit less. And everybody told me, number one, you're going to need to be honest. You're going to need to tell an employer. I had a crime against an employer, so I had like a double whammy. I was a felon with a crime against an employer, triple whammy, because I was all over the news. And so you could have Googled me, and I would be the first one to come up. So I knew that it was going to be a really a struggle. And everyone told me, you're going to have to go and apply for a lot of jobs. You're going to have to sit across from a lot of potential employers, and you're going to have to tell them your story. And I'm like, oh my God, this is just embarrassing. It's the worst thing I'm ever going to have to do. And I went for two jobs. I have a background in admin in real estate and executive assistant. And I went for two of those jobs, one as an executive assistant, one in real estate. And I didn't get the executive assistant job, but I did get the one in real estate. And I sat across from these people. In both instances, it was a couple, and I told them my story. And you never know who you're going to see out there and what their stories are. But the real estate guy, his ex-wife had something similar happen to her. And he felt that everyone should be given a second chance. And he thought that I should have been given a second chance. So I went for two jobs and I got one of them immediately, and I didn't get the other. And I thought, that's Alcoholics Anonymous in action. That's me putting everything that I had learned in this program into action, and things are coming true for me. And I just need to back up really quick. When I was in prison, I was making amends, and there was a couple of people that I needed to make amends to, and they weren't really friendly with me. They asked me to stop reaching out to them at one point. And when I came out, I was in Starbucks with Darren, and I saw the district attorney that prosecuted my case, sent me to prison. And I saw him walk in, and I said, I've got to go talk to him. I've got to go make an amends to him. And Darren's like, what are you going to say? And I said, I don't care. I got to go, or I'll never do it. And I walked up to this man, who I'm sure hears this a lot and then has fear for his life. But I said, can I speak to you outside? And he was like, okay. And we went outside, and I said, I don't know if you remember me. And this is 2 years had gone by. I don't know if you remember me. And he said, I remember you, Angela. And I just started crying, because all I do is cry at this point. And I just said, I acted so inappropriately to you in court. Because I used to just say, I just yell. I would blurt things out to him in the middle of court. I was just super, super mean and disrespectful and rude. And, you know, I made my amends to him, and his response was, I don't think you're a bad person. I think you just got wrapped up in something, and I think you're going to do great things. And, you know, that, again, that has not been my experience for all the amends that I've made. But that was one of the first in-person amends that I made when I came out, and that just set me on fire. That was amazing to me, because all the work that I had done while I was away absolutely came true. You know, the promises came true for me when I stood next to this man and said that. And I see him still to this day, and we say hello, and it's awesome. You know, I'm sure that's not most people's experience. And I don't hold any resentment towards him. I let go of that a long time ago. And so I start working at this job. I was there for about 2 or 3 months. And the other job that I had gone for called me and said, we have another opening that we really think you'd be awesome for. And I'm like, this is weird. This is weird. So I actually went into that office over Christmas break, and the office was empty. And I thought, a CEO and a president. And I thought she's going to come around that corner and go, oh, oops, I made a mistake. It was not you that I meant to call. And I just had fear. I was just panicking. And she came around the corner, and she's like, I cannot believe you're like willing to take this job. I'm so happy. And I thought, she's got to be kidding me. Does she not remember my story? And I'll have been at that job for 4 years in January. And you know, they know my story. I had been there for about a month, and I guess a couple of people that worked there Googled me and told the owners their concerns. And so they called me into their office, and they said, we think you should get up in front of everyone and tell them your story. And I thought, oh my God. And it's a startup company. It's a software company, and it's like still in the, it was still in the startup phases. We were about 50 people. We're over 100 now. And I had to get up on a thing. I mean, it was very much like this. And I told my story. And that was the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And, you know, because these people, they don't know me. They're not you guys. They can judge me. And they have, and they did. You know, they can dislike me. And they can be really mean to me. And I thought, and they can fire me. And and I thought, this is not going to go well. And I just remember people coming up to me afterwards and crying and saying, oh my God, I can't believe it. I only gave like a 10-minute pitch. And but I ended it with, if anyone wants to talk to me about prison, like, everybody loves a good prison story. So like, I love talking about it. Come talk to me. And all the guys are like, I got a question. It was met with a lot of love and compassion and understanding, and no one has judged me on that since. And about 2 years ago, we lost our a couple of members of our accounting department, and they asked me to help out in the accounting department. And that's because they trust me. And, you know, I don't think that anyone ever trusted me around money, including myself. And this is a company, and they know my story. They know what I did. They know that I went to prison and what for. And they asked me to help out in accounting. And after 90 days of being there, they gave me my own credit card. They trust me with that. They've never questioned me. They've never questioned anything that I do. I'm the next to our salary and our servers, I'm the third thing that costs the most, like, creates the most expenses in our office because I do operations and I spend the most amount of money. And not once have they ever questioned that. And that, to me, is amazing. And, you know, I could never repay them for the opportunity that they give me. And I'm appreciative of them every chance I get. You know, I've been there for a long time. I have a pretty important role there. And I don't make the best money, but I don't care. You know, it's not about that for me. It's about them showing me that they have trust in me and they believe in me and they believe in giving people second chances. And because of that, I believe in giving people second chances. And, you know, I would have never switched sponsors if mine hadn't moved away. My original sponsor had moved and I found someone new. And I'm not the most normal at like being social. And I'd never even met this woman before. I had heard her speak once. And I walked up to her at a meeting and I said, "Can you just be my sponsor?" And she's just like, "What do you mean? Can I just be your sponsor? Or do you want to meet and talk?" And I'm like, "I don't know. Whatever. Whatever you guys do." And, you know, and she knows that that's just me now. And, you know, I told my first sponsor my story. And when I met with my sponsor that I have now, I told her things that I didn't tell my first sponsor, and I don't know why. It wasn't necessarily things related to drinking. It was just things in my life that I had done. And, you know, if I ever needed another reason to feel like I belonged here, she gave it to me. She was like, "Yep, you belong here. Like, that's not normal." And, you know, she laughed, and she's got a lot of the same experiences that I had, and she did a lot of the same things that I did, and you know, for her to say that was pretty awesome. And you know, everything that I've learned in this program, everything that you guys have taught me about being a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous, just it goes back to my willingness to do everything that you've asked me. And like I said, I'm not willingly excited about coming and speaking or doing that or getting a commitment somewhere. I have a lot of outside things that I do, and you know, for me to say yes, I'll be at that meeting every night or every Wednesday or whatever is really difficult for me when I have work things or other commitments. But me picking up commitments, me doing those things means that I'm going to be accountable, and I've never been accountable to anything other than myself. And, you know, now I'm accountable to someone and somebody, something else other than me. And I take that really seriously. I lost my dad, my stepdad, who pretty much raised me. I lost him a few years ago. And one of the things that I wanted to do for my family was to spend time with them, because I had neglected them after I was arrested and going through my court case. It was really important to me to not just be the same taker that I had always been. Where are we going and how am I going to benefit from it? What are we going to do that I want to do? I know it's your birthday, Mom, but what am I going to get out of it? How am I going to benefit? Well, I want to do this, and not, it doesn't matter about you. And I didn't do it as much when I came home, but I really wanted to focus on treating people differently, because I treated people like shit through my whole entire life. And I wanted to treat people differently. And when I worked the steps, I thought I would have to change. I thought that my sense of humor can be quite sarcastic, and it can be at the expense of others sometimes. And I thought, I'm going to have to lose that. And that sucks, because I'm just going to be boring. And, you know, or I'm going to have to start being this way. And that just, like, that's not going to be any fun. And I realized to be nice to people or to be generous with your time is really, really easy. And it's a lot, it's like with my lying. It was a lot harder for me to keep track of all the lies and all the intricacies of those lies and who I told what to than it was to just tell the truth. And now when I have to tell the truth and I know it's going to sting, it just stings for a second. And I wait for the reaction, and I go, "Oh, that wasn't so bad." I have to do that at work when I've got to tell them bad news. And I wait, and their face, they go, "Damn, okay, it's fine." And I'm like, oh my God, what if I had kept on that lie for 6 months? Where would that have gotten me? And that's what I've learned in this program, is to act like a normal person and just be a normal member of society, which I was never in all of my many years of life. I've never been a normal member of society. And I always took. And so one of the things that I wanted to do when I came out was to spend time with my family, quality time. And I started doing that. And then my dad got sick. And, you know, life gets busy and things happen. And I wasn't there as much as I would have wanted to have been when he was sick. And, you know, now I make it a point to be there for my mom as much as I can. And I call her every day. And I check in with her through text several times a day if we don't talk. And she's very busy. She has a busy life. But I try to go down and see her at least every weekend. She lives in Ventura, so it's not far. But I try to do those things because I know it matters to her and it matters to me. Because it matters to me to be a good person and to be the person that you guys have taught me to be. Because that's not the person that I was when I was younger, and that's not the person that I grew up being. You know, when I was 7 and stealing from the store, and I thought vaguely, I thought definitely there's something wrong with me. This isn't normal. You know, and then I probably brushed it off, and I carried on with my life doing those things, small and then bigger and bigger, you know, as time went on. And it became normal. It came absolutely normal to do these things, to steal from you, to lie to you, to cheat on you, to be an asshole to you, whatever it was, that became the norm. So many years of reversing that was very difficult for me. And it's still very difficult to not want to, you know, scream out the window to someone on the freeway when they're in the fast lane going 60. And I try my best. Doesn't always work. But, you know, I can still be short sometimes, and I can still challenge you on things you say, and I can still pretend like I'm in the right all the time. And it's not always the best way to do it, but I try. And, you know, and it's getting better and better. I don't pretend to know all the secrets of Alcoholics Anonymous and how to figure this out right away and get all that, you know, just be wise to this and be an amazing person. But I try every day. I try harder and harder. And at the start of this year, I decided that I have a lot to give back. And I don't have a lot of free time, but what free time I do have, I feel like I deserve to give back to this world that I took so much from for so long. So instead of just one, I decided that I would get involved in 3 different volunteer opportunities. Because why not? I like to overdo it. And I currently volunteer at our Alano Club doing their events. And I'm an ambassador for the American Cancer Society, which is really, really important to me. And I volunteer for a organization that rescues dogs because they're very important to me too. And, you know, I exhaust myself sometimes putting in all this energy and all this effort into doing all this stuff and working full time and having a husband and a life at home and going to meetings and trying to sponsor other people and be sponsored and spend time with my family. But, you know, I look back at where I was a few years ago, sitting in a prison cell, thinking, yeah, this is definitely the definition of having my life be unmanageable. And all that time that I spent there thinking about all the things that I would do if I got out. Because you don't really think, even though you have a release date, you think you're never going to get out when you're in there. And all these things that I would do if I had a normal life again. If only I could have a normal life again, I would do all of these amazing things. And it took me a couple years to remember that I had said that to myself. And slowly it happened. And then slowly I've become that person that is trying to do all those things. And, you know, it's not to get gratitude. It's to, you know, to have people say thank you or to feel good about things myself. I do it because I've taken so, so much from so many people that that's the least thing that I can give back to someone or anything, in, you know, any organization or person. It's the least that I can do. And I learned that in these rooms. I learned that by working the steps. I learned that by working with a sponsor that knew something better than I did and knew how to take someone like me through the steps and knew what I needed to hear and how I needed to focus my energy. And, you know, if you're new, all I can say is get into action. Find a sponsor that's serious about this program and learn something about yourself that you can change by working these steps, because it's absolutely amazing. So thank you.
And we also like to thank everyone.